Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Is that awful haircut for a keeper?
Tim's flagship podcast, the first one on YouTube, youtube.com/20minutetims. We are videoing this for the first time ever. I am, of course, joined by my podcast pals, Stephen.
What's happening?
And Melly.
Good day.
And we have picked a scorcher to sit in the studio. First time, the conditions outside are absolutely mental. I was in London this weekend for a little break. I got back today. Flooding, pissing rain and pouring. And everyone that I told about that was sending me pictures of Glasgow, saying, look how sunny it is here. So one, that ruined my London trip. Secondly, I'm driving home in a taxi and I'm driving through the past the Thames and I go underneath a bridge and I swear, I don't know if I told you this, or I swear I can hear a group of guys singing Fuck Your Ten in a Row. And I'm thinking, no chance. And I'm thinking, absolutely no chance I can hear this. And I stop at the traffic and we're stuck under this bridge and it's just reverberating. So I just went on Twitter, put Rangers fans London, and yeah, there was something called the Thames Sash Bash happening. I think Rangers were playing QPR. I was like, my God, I can't escape these rodents anywhere, man.
No, I'm afraid not. Sadly, that is life now for us after the season we've just had. We've ushered this back into reality. We've wished it into existence. But you're right, I could not be shinier sitting here in this fantastic purpose-built studio that people can now
they
view.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
Unfortunately, they can also see me in my shiny head.
You got a lot of compliments. We did a dress rehearsal, and there was some images from the dress rehearsal going about the Discord chat. And got to say, Stephen, a lot of positive feedback. People were very fond of the way you look. But anyway, that's enough of that. The reason we have this studio that you spoke about there, Stephen. Yeah. It's thanks to the people on Patreon, patreon.com/20minutetims. If you've been listening to us for a wee while, you'll know all about the Patreon. It's a website that allows people who enjoy the podcast to support and contribute to the podcast. And that in turn allows us to invest in everything you see here, studios and new laptops and new microphones and earphones and everything that helps us going. As well as that, in return, you get additional content. It's all there, patreon.com/20minutetims. At the moment, we're selling season tickets of our own, so you can log on to patreon.com and get a vastly reduced rate for paying up front for the season. You can get everything we do, pre and post match and videos and all of that, all the details are available, patreon.com/20minutetims. Now that was a somewhat improved pitch from last week. I did say I would work on it.
It was like a ball rolling downhill. That's what it was. It just started and it was gathering pace as you went along. Nothing was stopping that pitch there. No. So we got through it. Whether all the details are in there remains to be seen. But you delivered it.
The truth is, if you didn't like that pitch, consider that when people say that we are out to sell ideas from the club to Celtic fans. If you go,
Don Mackay comes to us to deliver his message. That's exactly. He sees these pitches and thinks,
that guy can.
I'm a comms guy. I'm a comms expert, and those guys can be my voice, my mouthpieces in the media.
Can't even sell my own Patreon. Never mind any ideas to the Celtic fans. Well, look, Don Mackay, you mentioned him. It's his job to sell Celtic players and buy Celtic players. And, well, there's certainly some selling been going on this week, not so much buying.
Well, it's all speculation and no substance at the moment, isn't it? And there are key players, there are big players leaving or about to leave, as we're led to believe. There's some either on the verge, who, depending on who you believe, depending on the source, either about to leave or as good as gone. But one key player from the last few seasons is definitely gone, and we are left with, and we'll get into it, we'll get into the defence, we'll get into the what we've been seeing this week. But the main defender that was left, Christopher Ayer, has left.
Yeah, he's gone. Yeah. And that was the Ange's, you know, we played West Ham melee in a pre-season friendly, we get absolutely murdered. And we did. We get absolutely murdered. Even Armstrong Okaflex came back to haunt us, which is something I never thought I'd say ever. And Ange pointed to the defence.
Yeah, it's been terrible, and look, it's been coming for so long. We've joked about it time and time again, but here we are, and that's all it took. It took another couple of mistakes from a defender during the week, and we're again, if that was the bare bones, I don't know where we are now, because we're pitched in there with a 21-year-old and an 18-year-old, an 18-year-old who made his competitive debut for Celtic in a Champions League qualifier, and he's going to be playing on Wednesday night again alongside Greg Taylor and Anthony Ralston. Now, if you look at that defence of Ralston, Murray, Welsh, Taylor, you could probably get away with one of them in a back four. Two of them, not quite. Three, no chance. Four, Jesus Christ. And we are going into the biggest match potentially we'll have this season, because if we get through this, it guarantees us Europa League football. And when this is the full back four, and this has been coming. We sold two right backs in January. We knew Christopher Ayer has been going the whole time. Yet we sit here nearly the end of July. The season starts this weekend. Champions League qualifiers are upon us. And this is our defence.
See, the problem is, Stephen, the West Ham game was like a dry run for this defence. So it, it gave us something to look at, because right, well, this is going to be the that is going to be the lineup, more or less, for the game against Mertiland. And that was that defence. You're just looking at it in disbelief. You're thinking these guys are going to get slaughtered.
It's the, I know that
both
some
in
people
West Ham and in Europe,
but some people are keen to say that it's just a friendly, and I understand that. But the problem is not that it's a friendly; it's the timing of it, because we are slap bang in the middle of competitive, crucial fixtures for Celtic. It's not like it's. A lot of teams are still in very early on in their preparation for the season. I think the Premier League is just still a month away or 3 weeks away or something like that. So we're in the middle of competitive fixtures. So I don't think we really get the right to say that this West Ham game was completely meaningless. It forms a significant part of the preparation for this game that's coming this week. It's a major part of that, because it's players playing for their place. It's players working on fitness. To me, it didn't look like players were just like, oh, who cares about this? It's only a friendly. Not only that as well, see if you strip all that away, you never want to have the big, you know, glamour friendly that's the we've got this season, that is the West Ham game. You never want to have the big homecoming for the Celtic fans in Ships 6. You know, you don't want to lose 6-2. So I don't really buy that it's completely meaningless, and we everyone can walk away happy that we just got a run out. So I was certainly watching that game thinking there are things that can be taken from that. You don't place ultimate importance in it, but it's not meaningless either. Absolutely no chance.
I would never have any meaningless chat for that game, Melly. No. Especially not when it was effectively a dry run for Mertiland away.
No, and judging by some of the goals that West Ham scored, the Celtic defence were on a slip and slide. There was no dry run in there. There was a couple of hot dogs thrown in there. What are you doing? But the thing is, see, if we had taken the West Ham game out, or we just had played a completely changed team and not seen any of the first team players, I would be going into this second leg of this Mitchelland game quite confident, because from the Mitchell, we'll obviously get into it more, but from Mitchelland, the Mitchelland game, the two centre-halves played really well, fought Greg Taylor and Anthony Ralston, played well for Greg Taylor and Anthony Ralston. I'm not saying they played really well, but for those two, what we're used to, they played well. And the only concern I would have is Barkas. But now going into the game after that West Ham game, West Ham are better than Mitchelland. But I'm just like, that's going to possibly drain our confidence from a defence that was already not very confident in their goalkeeper. And now it might spill into the defence, so that might spill into the midfield and all that. So if the game hadn't taken place or we hadn't seen those players, I'd probably be okay. But after that game, it was just so easy. It was a couple of passes and teams were in on us.
So you think maybe that game, Stephen, might have done more harm than good?
Yeah, you never want to take a 6-2 drilling at home. No. Just never. And
6-2 is harsh, because 4-2 when the players went off.
Fair enough. I did say last week or a couple of weeks ago on various Patreon episodes that we have, that once the subs start getting made in these games, the arse falls out of it, and it no longer becomes the contest it once was. So you're absolutely right about that. But you never want to lose to West Ham are a decent team. There's no getting away from that. They finished just behind the European champions last season. They weren't far off them. Where I think the positives, slight positive, can come in it's dampened somewhat by the fact that I said that the timer is unfortunate here. We're right in the middle of competitive games, but I don't necessarily think it's the worst thing in the world for players like this, for developing players, to take a bit of a pasting on occasion, right? It's a bit of a lesson for these guys.
Cup call.
Yeah, exactly. The now annual reality check that we get, it's just not that it's in Europe or whatever, but I was watching some of these players and I couldn't help but think there's levels to this shit. Mm. And it's like, even watching a guy like Mikel Antonio is a cracking player, but he's like a kind of run-of-the-mill English striker. He's not he's not Didi Drogba, he's not Sergio Aguero or anything like that, but we managed to make him kind of look like that. He gets about eight to 10 goals a season. There was one moment where Edward shat himself out of a header, an easy header. It just looked as if he'd kind of closed his eyes and withdrew his head into his neck. And then right up the other end, Antonio just makes a complete mockery of the defence and rolls it in. And I thought, oh, this is a bit of a lesson now. It's not necessarily the worst thing in the world. It's just unfortunate it comes right before a key game and we don't really want confidence taking a massive
also
hit.
The issue is, it's so obvious what's wrong with Celtic now.
Yeah.
All the issues that we had in Midtjylland came again against West Ham, will come again against Midtjylland midweek. This defence is... It's nowhere near good enough.
No.
It's nowhere near good enough. And it gets shown up in Europe in the Midtjylland game, which I really enjoyed. I really enjoyed that game. I didn't really enjoy the West Ham game so much. But another player we need to talk about is Barkas. Look, we've tried our best with Barkas. We have tried our best with Barkas. Okay, last year he came, couldn't he settle for whatever reason. And then that's absolutely fine. You say, okay, but we give him the benefit of the doubt, just like Neil Lennon gave him the benefit of the doubt a couple of times, and he's sort of fallen away. Do we need to maybe just wake up to the fact that maybe Barkas just isn't a good goalie now? I mean, that whatever he was trying to do in the Midtjylland game, come out and punch across, it was a decent delivery, but we've always said that he's never made a save, right? He's never had anything to do, he's never made a save. In these last two games, he's had opportunities to make saves,
yeah,
and he's not made them. He's not made one good save, I don't think, that springs to mind. And you think, right, okay, there's a player in there. We maybe just need to write off that the recruitment team that found us Shane Duffy also found us Vasilis Barkas, also found us Albin Ayeti. We maybe just need to stop. We need to look at the evidence, the body of evidence here that's presented in front of us and say, do you know what? Maybe he's a dud.
It's looking like it now. I've tried. I gave him the clean slate like everybody else at the start of the season, but the Michelin game... It's a good shot, a decent shot, but it's not one you think, he's outdone the keeper there. He goes to punch it or whatever he does and moves his arms away. And then I was at the game and it was right behind. Had a great view of it and he turns round and looks as if the goal's moved. But mate, that's the only thing that doesn't move. You can move players, you can move your position. The goal doesn't move. So it was as if to me he was looking around and he got his bearings wrong again. Mm. It goes in off the post. But even the one, the West Ham ones, well, the second West Ham goal, his positioning is a criminal for any goalkeeper. He's near enough on his far post and the guy just puts it in his near post and it just looks like a guy completely bereft of confidence again. And in the friendlies up to the games we had this week, he didn't really have anything to do, so you're still in that doubt. Like, I don't know if he's good or not. Mm. The evidence from then is he's no very good and he's 27 years old. He's not a young guy. It's not as if he's been thrown in there. He's been there. He's been in big competitions, but it just looks like this move's not right for him and it's never going to turn out because there's too many doubters now.
We just assumed, Stephen, that we paid £5 million for a goalkeeper. He was from a decent level at Ike Athens. We scouted him. The scouting reports came back positive. But you know, we just have to admit, sometimes it doesn't work out for players at clubs, no matter how good they are.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? We've benefited from it in the past.
Absolutely.
Famously, like with the likes of Chris Sutton and all that, who'd maybe the fact we just need to move Barkas on now and some other club can benefit from Celtic's mistake.
Another position we need to fill, but on top but
we
of
need to, even if we sell him or not, we'd need to fill that position. You cannot embark on this season with Vasilis Barkas and go.
I think we've been more than fair with Barkas. You're right. I think we've tried our very best. We've tried to look for the positives, even though there aren't any. When Mel and I did a reaction to the Michelin game immediately after it, I said that I'm now running out of reasons. I'm now running out of things to say that aren't just he's a crap keeper because I don't want to get there. I'm looking for things. I'm continually given the benefit of the doubt. when there isn't really any there. He could be the best keeper in the world, for all I know, but I haven't seen a shred of evidence that it's the case yet.
And we're gaslighting ourselves here yeah. about Barkas.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that to an extent. There's a border that comes where you eventually end up deluded about players and you end up a daft happy clapper about every Celtic player. Aye. You don't want to get to that point, but I don't think...
Certainly some of them when it comes to that particular guy that we're going to get to.
But I don't think there's anything wrong with being positive about Celtic signings until you can no longer be positive. I'm not going to apologise for that. It just leaves us looking silly, and that's, you know, that's about the result. But
I'm just feeling like to give Barkas the benefit of the doubt, we now have to give the recruitment team and the board the benefit of the doubt.
The problem is now that up until then, there's maybe been one or two contentious ones where some people say that's a keeper's mistake. Some people say, no, like the Goldson one, it was a header from the 6-yard box. Yeah. Maybe could have done better, but not sure about that. In the past two games, there's ones you can clearly pin on him and go, they're definitely his fault.
I've never seen him come for a cross and clear house. I've never seen him. And we need things like that, you know? Well,
seeing the Mitchell game, where I was sitting, the fans are being very, very encouraging, very positive around him, because any time he came out and claimed a very, very routine cross, I'm talking about picking up anything, people were cheering him, people were clapping him. And then 5 minutes later, he goes and does that with the goal, and it just goes through him as if he's not there. Melligan makes a good point about how he doesn't seem to know where his goal is. And regular listeners will know that I'm fond of like a fives analogy here, but that's honestly, I can relate to it so much, because when I get forced to go in goals, I'm terrible at it. So
you let them in, but so you can.
I just kind of throw it in. But that's what I do. I don't know how to be a goalkeeper. So when it's your turn, you just, if somebody's converging on you, somebody's bearing down on you, come out. I don't know what to do when I get here. But then somebody knocks in, you're like, oh, kind of forgot where my posts were there. And you've suddenly left like a mile of space in behind you. And we've all seen the images of his positioning for that Antonio goal. That's crazy. And that doesn't come into the, oh, it's just a friendly. Well, what, the purpose of these friendlies is to prepare yourself for
games. It's basically an MOT.
Yeah, exactly.
It's an MOT for your side.
If you're doing that in a friendly, in front of the crowd, again, I don't want to labour this point, but it's been a long time for a lot of people. I was lucky enough to win the ballot. Win the ballot, as if I've achieved something there. But I was lucky enough to win a ticket in the ballot.
Thanks, Dom.
So I wasn't at the West Ham, but there was a return for thousands and thousands of people who hadn't been there for well over a year, and they came back in. So you don't get to say, ah, you know, just let that one in. It was fine. But no, it's concerning now, because as we've spoken about a number of times now, with nothing else there, and if it's yet another absolutely pivotal position we need to fill, then I'm worried about that, because we can all talk about how many right backs we need. We need one, and then we maybe need a backup, or we need somebody who can provide competition. But we're now looking at down the barrel of needing three goalkeepers on the eve of our season.
And this is it. Like,
are you going to play Scott Bain on Wednesday night?
He's worse.
I know.
We've got two goalkeepers that don't make sense. And I know I am reluctant to give Neil Lennon any sort of leeway or free passes from last season. But Neil Lennon couldn't decide between the three of them. And now it's looking like Ange can't either. Because he doesn't know who his first choice.
Why would you? What are they giving you? It's like, how can you pick between three third choice keepers? It's just impossible.
You would play the guy who's got the lowest appearance money and just try and save some cash.
Pocket the rest.
You would just pocket the rest. I mean, we're balancing too much on a side that are not good enough. That team that took to the field against West Ham, and I made the point last week, for West Ham and for Midtjylland next week, I mean, the majority of those guys are not Ange's first choice, and the ones who are, it's David Turnbull and Callum McGregor. Everyone else might not even, apart from David Turnbull and Callum McGregor, all of the players, am I right in thinking, Melly, that started against Midtjylland and West Ham could feasibly be replaced and not be playing here in a couple of ones.
Abada as well, he's come in, so. But Christie, Edward, I'd still ideally want somebody instead of Sorrow, and all the back five. So
it's literally an insane position we've got ourselves in. Let's briefly keep on the West Ham game and let's talk about some positives, though. As you say, fans were back. I didn't get pulled in the ballot, unfortunately. Melly, you got pulled. You were there with Tom. Or Melee at the Match. Melee at the Match is back, which is our post-match podcast. Anytime we actually get to the games, we'll be doing a Melee at the Match. You go, you sample the atmosphere, you get a bit of crowd noise. Makes you feel like you're at the game. What was it like going back to Celtic Park? For those who obviously didn't win the ballot or not been yet to Celtic Park, is it complicated? Do you have to wear a mask?
No.
How was the atmosphere?
You
was it rude?
But Wink, wink. You do have to wear a mask. They right. announced that several times during the game, during the Mitchelland game.
Outside, they wanted you to wear a mask outside.
And I did. No. I wore my mask at the... No, they do.
Did they?
Outside?
Genuinely, yes. Oh, you have to... In your seat, you have to wear your mask.
Even I thought you meant outside the stadium.
So. No. They're going to chase you down London Road, make sure you're wearing a mask. But you need to wear it in the stadium, and I definitely did. But it's... It's
you're
going to weird.
Get a bit, you're going to get a tan. You're going to get a, especially in the sun.
It's strange being back at the game because of the low crowd. It doesn't take many fans to generate a bit of an atmosphere, but it has more the feel of like one of these kind of Legends games or something like that. It has more the kind of noise level of that. That said, it's still an impressive level of noise for it being less than a tenth full.
Both of you were at the Mitchelland game as well.
That was great being back. You went in and it just, I did that guy thing where you take a wee video going up there. I didn't have a kid or anything with me, but I just felt that first time back, I should just sample it. And just standing there, that you'll never walk alone, reading the teams out, let's get some noise for the boys. And as I said on the Mail of the Match, lucky I had specs on, my sunglasses on, because it was emotional going back there. And as soon as the You'll Never Walk Alone went on and then the teams came out the huddle, you're like, it's back, a bit of normality's back, Celtic are back. And a new sort of era for everybody. Andrew's first game there, there's a couple of new players, and it's not last season where you're sitting watching it in front of a TV yourself or on a laptop and you're just like, oh, this is dreadful. We don't know what's going to happen this year, whereas every week it felt like we knew what was going to happen. But it was just great to be back. You were lucky enough to get in there. And look, the game, the performance was good, but it could have been a wee bit better if it wasn't for a couple of players making mistakes. But it's players we knew would make mistakes going into this, so...
I mean, this is the thing. There's almost no surprises with this season already. And I feel really bad for Ange, because I know he's come in with his eyes open. He's had a few grumbles and he certainly won't be happy with what's going on. But that's the first game at Parkhead, a Champions League qualifier, and we can barely string a team together. Anthony, we're not even going to go over it all again. The inclusion of Nir Bitton at centre-half was a meme before the game. It was a meme, and who else... to sell the jerseys effectively in the game against Mitchelland, but near Beaton again.
I watched the game back and I was sort of trying to analyse it as poorly as I can. And I watched Beaton specifically because I wanted to see what he'd done. And he played left centre-half. And even before he gets sent off, he went off injured and he was off the field for 8 minutes. Yeah. And he only made it to, 44 minutes or whatever he was sent off. So he'd 30-odd minutes in the park. Celtic are wanting to play out from the back. He's playing left centre-half. He's a midfielder, apparently, playing at centre-half. So he's meant to be good on the ball. He gave the ball away 5 or 6 times, I counted. Mm. Simple passes. He was giving away fouls. He obviously... The foul that he gives away on the halfway line is criminal, because it's the exact same thing he got done for at Ibrox at New Year, where he gets sent off for that because it was a goal-scoring opportunity. And he does it again. He took a smash to the face, and I can only think that has affected his performance in some way, because the decisions he was making, the passes he was making, and when he gets down to it, we can blame Beaton, but I want to have a look at the full... the defence, and it was more apparent in the West Ham game. But when Celtic play, we're playing with these inverted fullbacks, so they come inside to build up the play, and that's fine. But the way I've seen both of these games, more so in the West Ham game, they're a better team. But as soon as a team wins the ball back off us, or we're in transition, one or two passes down our flanks and you're in on top of our centre-halves. So I spoke to you about it when we were watching, I think it was a Sheffield Wednesday game or one of the first friendlies. There's a lot of space down our flanks, and I think 4 or 5 of West Ham's goal came from out wide positions or playing it in. As soon as you're in one-on-one with our centre-halves, they're not the best centre-halves one-on-one either. They're not the paces, as Stephen Welsh seen against Antonio when he was towing that caravan. But the one when you're beat on, when he gets sent off, the ball goes in and it goes up the pitch, it comes back, and Nir Bitton doesn't win his challenge in the halfway line. That's his first mistake. The ball goes out wide and it's played out wide. Bitton looks at the linesman.
Yes, I was hoping you picked up on that.
And he's lax, and then he starts to sprint in, and the guy manages to make it back. The guy goes down and then he gets up. And the guy doesn't say a word to him. I watched it. He doesn't say a word to him. Beaton shouting in his face. The guy
dived, though.
He did dive. Yeah. And the guy sort of goes in and then goes away, and Beaton goes back at him and just points him in the face. He's not even arguing with Beaton, Dreyer. It's unforgivable. And then he has the cheek to go back to the ref and the linesman as if it's a pure massive mistake. He's already on a booking.
The thing that got me was I was watching the game in the Brazen, and the thing that got I got my jab at the Central Mosque and just sauntered my way up and watched the game in the Brazen. The thing that got me was the linesman thing. But the guy's passed him, and instead of, and you're thinking instinctively chase the guy down, let the linesman worry about if he's offside. But the guy runs by Beaton, and the guy's take two or three steps, and he looks at linesman as if to say, "Is he offside, mate? Why are you waiting for the linesman to make?" And from that point on, it's all error correction for near Beaton. Shit, he's getting away from me. Shit, I've fouled him, but it wasn't a foul. It's in the box. He's pissed me off. Near Beaton's angry because of the whole situation got away from him, and he ends up getting himself sent off. It was just, it is very reminiscent of the red card at the Rangers game. Yeah. But at the same time, I'm watching this going, what do we expect was going to happen here?
I don't think it's any coincidence that a number of the players, and there's another one that's going to have to come up, and unfortunately another one was involved against West Ham, but we'll keep that aside for now. I don't think it's a coincidence that a number of the players we listed last season as we don't want to be here are continuing to let us down, and it's not a witch hunt. We don't single out guys like Beaton and Rogic and Griffiths, right? We don't single them out because it's a personal thing. It's just that Celtic are stale, and these guys represent everything that has gone wrong in the last few seasons.
See the Celtic team that are playing Midtjylland midweek? That'll be the worst Celtic team I've seen probably in 20 years.
It's probably going to be the least experienced, least prepared, but Beaton is meant to be... I also don't think it's a coincidence that despite the fact he's been at Celtic for about 8 years, no one ever talks of him as being like a go-to guy. No one talks about him
as if been a first team player.
Exactly. So no one ever talks about the experience, the guy who knows what it takes, and he's been there, done that. He doesn't seem to carry any of that around of him. He's just a guy. He's just there, and he just plays.
He's a journeyman.
Aye, he just plays when nobody else is. I've heard all the arguments about how he's a, you know, he's a good ball playing centre half and all that. But the trouble is, the second it turns to pressure on Celtic, and it always does, regardless of competition, regardless of opposition, whether you're playing Midtjylland or whether you're playing Barcelona or whether you're playing Partick Thistle, there will be one moment in a game where they get the upper hand and have an attack. That second is when it all goes to pieces.
What I will say about Near Beaton, right, and I'm sort of contradicting the ire opinion that we've made on this podcast many times, right? I don't care how many games Near Beaton plays at centre half. He's a midfielder. He just doesn't have any centre half instincts at all. He can't win headers. Can't really tackle. Takes his eye off. He's got no centre half instincts whatsoever.
No, it's again like Stephen said. He shouldn't be there because at some point you have to play these guys.
We stuck him there the first time because he was tall. Yeah. That's the only reason he ended up at centre half the first time.
And it's the same thing with Rogic and Griffiths. Like these guys. Sometimes unintentionally, Rogic's body can't handle it. Beaton, he'll let you down with things like this. And Griffiths, we all know what he does. But if you keep these guys around because they're good backup or whatever, or squad players, that means they're going to have to play at some point if you get injuries. Whereas, taking away the West Ham game, Dane Murray comes on for Near Beaton, barely put a foot wrong. Would you not rather see that than see a guy at 28 years old let you down? Because Dane Murray can learn from it and might be a good player for Celtic. Is Near Beaton going to be there? Because if he finishes his contract, he'll be due a testimonial. Are you going to turn up to that?
Nobody's turning up to Near Beaton. No offence, Near, but nobody's turning up to a Near Beaton testimonial.
Tired of ads interfering with your favourite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
There were some positives to take for the Mityland game. I thought there was some really good performances. Abida burst onto the scene. I was reluctant when we signed him, just the money we paid for him for a start, $3.5 million. Young guy come from Israel. I had to look at the club he played for. They share a stadium. I think their average home attendance is something like bloody 2,000 or 3,000. Mm-hmm. It's a really small club that we've signed him from. We were all making fun of it last week. Encouraging performance from him. Encouraging performance from Brian Christie, a player that looks to be out on the way out of the club. Rather, Melly, any more positives?
Yeah, I thought middle to front, it was really good. And like, I spoke about the weaknesses in the formation, but we also seen the strengths, like Abida and Christie terrorised them down the flanks. Yeah. They could keep the wingers high and wide, and it presses their defenders back. And it was great. I thought Turnbull in that number 10 position.
Stephen Welsh was actually okay that game.
I think everybody played well apart from Barkas and Beaton, but just from middle to front, I thought it was really good. And look, we're going to get goals this season, but unfortunately I think we're going to concede unless we make big changes. But middle to front, Abida, I didn't know if he was going to start. There was some talk last week, UEFA didn't have him listed on our squad list, so we weren't sure if he was going to play. What, did he have half an hour coming into this game? Ryan Christie had 45 minutes in a friendly, Odds and Edward roughly the same, and the three of them came in and looked good. Abida and Christie in particular. Christie, the performance he put in with such little game time in him was incredible. We had the change obviously going down to 10 men, but Abida, I think he looks great. The crosses he put in, two crosses in for Christie where he hit the post, then he had the header over, and then when Turnbull plays the ball out wide to Christie, good shot, thankfully, and Abida's there to tap it home. Right foot, left foot, didn't matter to him. He was great, direct, quick, penetrative, like myself, and then gets the goal as well, and it was great to open back up at Parkhead.
No, so glad he mispronounced it, Stephen.
No, Christie is looking, unfortunately it might turn out to be, he's looking like an absolutely key player. He's looking like a perfect player for Ange's system. Now whether it's like one of those like Dembele and Edward things where we get 3 weeks of it and you think, oh, how, what could have been? And then Christie plays really, really well for two or three games and then he's gone. Because in fairness, it has sort of died down a little bit about Christie. There hasn't been an awful lot of speculation. It seems to have been driven up midway through last season. Maybe his dad speaking out of school a little bit. He's running his gap.
I don't know. He's very friendly, but like the Chris Iyer. I think they're best mates, and I think it's very difficult. I just feel like he's on his way out of the club. He's probably got a different mindset, though. Christie's probably more along the lines of, right, I'm being picked. I really want to help the club. He's probably doing that thing, you know. That's what I took from it anyway.
Maybe. There's no links with anyone but either.
No, it seems to have died all the way down, so it's, I don't know whether he is.
He was like with Saudi Arabia 2 weeks ago, but who knows?
I mean, they could be just playing to get himself in the shop window, and if he has... Who cares? Because he sells to get good performances out of him, and if somebody comes in with a decent bid, then he's gone. That's what we expected.
I think he owes us. I do think he probably owes us another good season. I mean, he broke into the team under Brendan Rodgers, had a couple of, last season. I feel like players like Ryan, more so Ryan Christie than Odson Edward. Odson Edward's like definitely off us. Stephen McGowan reporting that Brighton are going to come in with a £20 million bid for him. I kind of feel like Christie isn't really. I feel like he's kind of Celtic's level. And I feel like if he stayed here next season and put in a right good move, a right good performance for us, he'd probably get a move. but off the back of last season, didn't really do much at the Euros. I don't really know what sort of move he's going to get himself.
Strangely, he's still only got 6 months left in his contract, so we could be playing him up till Christmas. Then
he just leaves. I know, that's a bizarre contract situation for Celtic to get themselves into, isn't it? You can't force him to sign an extension, of course, but it's very unusual for a guy's contract to expire in mid-season. Yeah. I mean, he could basically just leave for next to nothing just now.
I've never heard of that before.
No, it's a very odd one. But for now, in the team, he's performing really well, yeah. Extremely well, actually. He looks like the Christie of old. So I don't want to hang too much on that particular peg at the moment, because he could just go. He could leave in the next couple of weeks. We don't know, but he is playing extremely well. But if he goes, is he yet another position we need to fill? Or, I mean, the guys coming in, there's Furuhashi coming in, Abada. I think I'm going to go with Abada rather than Abada. I think that's the way it tripped out of my mouth there. But
Starfield as well, he's coming in centre-half.
Yeah, there's players coming in. So
Julian's still to come back.
All is not lost, but, I mean, to be losing guys. The thing with Christie is, though, I don't think anyone's surprised. I don't think if Christie was to leave tomorrow, it wouldn't be like, we wouldn't fall off our chairs in absolute shock. We've been expecting it for a couple of seasons.
Do you know what? Everything comes back to every discussion we have got here about these games, about the Champions League, about players, all comes back to poor preparation.
Yeah.
That's all it. And remember, we've been told last season, oh, there's no big rebuild. And do you know what? See if that was what people thought. If that's what people within the club thought, that there's no big rebuild need. The job is massive. And you're saying the rumours about Christie have died down. The rumours about us bringing MDN's died down.
Yeah.
We're linked to the occasion. We know we've needed a right back since January. We know we told Christopher Ayer he could go and did nothing about replacing him until a couple of weeks ago. It's insane. And it's insane that we're not prioritising these games. And there must, I imagine, there's a reason for it. I suspect there's a reason for it. But at the same time, clubs are champing at the bit to get our players out the door. We kind of get players in the door. And it's in everything we talk about tonight, it comes back to, I mean, Stephen Welsh, I said he was okay, he was better than okay. I thought he played really well against Maitland, but he's still a young player, and it's madness to me that we would go into the season with him, a prospect of playing the majority of the season with Stephen Welsh at centre-half. There is major work to be done. I'm not being like Chicken Little complaining that the roof's falling in, but I don't think any Celtic fan could watch the games we've watched so far, the West Ham game and the Maitland game, and look at that team and go, We need surgery, we need reinforcements immediately.
Well, it all comes back to what I was saying about Beto on there as well. He's supposed to be the senior guy in defence now. Like, he is the guy everyone should be able to turn to and think, well, you've been here for 8 years, you must know exactly how to navigate these games. But he's the one who lets you down, whereas I thought Stephen Welsh was the exact opposite.
Yeah.
I thought he was bordering on heroic against Midtjylland. Got carried away a couple of times with, you know, challenges, and one for the free kick as well, which I wasn't sure about at the time. It was right in front of me, but I'd kind of... The old specs on, I would convince myself, oh, referee, there's nothing wrong with that. I was obviously wrong, but he got carried away. He needs to learn maybe not to go to ground quite so readily. But I thought he had a great game in that game. I think Murray was very good when he came on as well, misplaced a couple of passes. But as Mel and I spoke about after the game, that's fine, right? The worst thing that would happen is if a guy comes on, misplaces one pass, and then that's it. His confidence is gone, so he just starts booting up the pitch. But one thing maybe we could give Ange and Kennedy and all that the credit for this as well. If he makes a mistake, he's perfectly happy to at least try that again and make the same mistake again. I know I'm saying the words "make a mistake" quite a lot here for something I'm trying to be positive about. I'm saying the word "mistake" an awful lot, but what I mean is that it's very easy to make a mistake and then just start bluttering up the pitch. Yeah. That's not what we want. We want people to stick to the principles and stick to the game plan. And if people are willing to make that mistake over and over again, you know, there's obviously a limit. You don't want somebody making 10 mistakes and then continuing to do it. But I thought it was quite encouraging from Murray that he's willing to make that pass again after not getting it through the first time.
See, I think that's the problem as well. Celtic were in cruise control. I thought we were playing really well. We'd got the goal. We seemed to have them on the rack a bit, I felt. They were terrified. They are wide players. And then the stupidity from Beaton, the poor mistake from Barkas. But what I did notice in the game as well is there's a few players just too eager, and that's what you're going to get with young players. There was one down just in front of me where it was Sisto was defending that left back area from a corner or something, and he tried to clear it up, and Ralston blocked him, pressed him, got him into the corner, then just swiped him and took him out, and it just relieved all the pressure. Sorrow had a couple in midfield where he just silly fouls, and there was another couple as well where it's just over-eager players, right down to the Stephen Welsh one.
Yeah,
I didn't think it was a foul at the game, but the guy's going away from goal towards the byline. You don't need to go to ground there. Show them out. Yeah. And this is the problem of having so many young players flung into this game in a team where they're not quite sure of Ange's specific way of playing yet. It's not natural to them. They're going to make these mistakes, and we're going to get silly bookings, silly fouls given away, and we get punished for it with the Welsh one, but you expect your keeper to save it as well. And it's just these wee things aren't adding up for Celtic, and that's what happens when you're not prepared. Fail to prepare, prepare to fail. Always the same.
I feel sorry for Ange leading. I do feel sorry for Ange Postecoglou leading his team into these games. We've given him a hell of a job. It's like the beginning of Save It, Private Ryan. That's how I feel watching Celtic just now. It's just, you know what's going to happen. You can see it. Players like Anthony Ralston, we give Anthony Ralston a hard time on this podcast. You know what? He gives us all.
Yeah.
Last season, how many times did we sit and say, did it look like the players left absolutely everything on the pitch? And we often came back for the game saying, no, it didn't. You watch Anthony Ralston, he's a limited footballer, but he leaves everything on the pitch.
Yeah, I think he did a couple of decent things against Midtjylland as well. I know that seems like very faint praise, but on occasion he did get to the byline and cut it back or win a corner or something, and that's fine. That's about all. I mean, that's about the best you can expect from the current fullbacks we've got. We just don't have anyone suitable for the position at the moment at all, whether it's in backup, and I'm not buying this ball and goalie stuff either about how he's just waiting in the wings to come and take his place back. The thing, see with Bolingoli is, I think the COVID thing, that going on that flight to Spain because he was super horny and ruining the season, I think that
what
is clouded.
Boy, yeah. What a boy.
Aye, boys will be boys, eh? But it's like, I think that has clouded the memory for a lot of people. The fact is, he'd lost his position long before that. Yeah. He was at the team for about 6 months before that happened, and Greg Taylor was the first choice, stretching well back into that season. So I don't think it's just a case of Bolingoli was great and then he made a massive mistake that derailed the start of last season, and that's why he's been kept on the sidelines. That's not how the narrative of Bolingoli's Celtic career has gone at all. It misses out the big bit where he just wasn't picked for months.
Let's talk. Let's play a little game here, right? Let's play a game where I just want you to say aye or no. I'm going to ask you first choice, aye or no, right? So, come the close of the transfer window. I want you to be Ange here, though. I want you to be Ange Postecoglou, right?
Character here.
How's your Australian accent?
What's my motivation for this scene?
I don't know. Any famous Australian... There's a lot of famous Australian actors, but there's not a lot of famous Australian movies. There's that movie called Australia with Hugh Jackman and Nicole Kidman. Mm-hmm. But that's about as far as my cultural knowledge of Australia goes. Okay. Vasilis Barkas. First choice or no?
Nope.
No.
No. Okay. Arnar. That's an Australian saying no. Yeah. Right. Anthony Ralston, first choice.
No. Nope.
Yep, there we go. Stephen Welsh, first choice and a half.
Nope.
Stephen?
Well, it's yes or no, Stephen.
It's a yes or no. It's yes or no, Stephen.
First choice meaning
the answer's no. You mad?
Do I want a better player? It's a very,
you're overthinking it. Stephen Welsh is not first choice centre half for Celtic next season.
No, probably not.
No, near Bitton.
No, no, a categorical no.
Right. Greg Taylor. Here's one where there's a bit of like discussion about it, because you're saying, you know, Greg Taylor, could we go out and sign a better left back? Well, we've obviously been trying. We're not really linked with any left backs. We've got Bolingoli. Greg Taylor is first choice just now. He was first choice last season. Do you think Melly though Ange would want him first choice?
No.
Stephen.
No.
Do you think he's likely to be first choice next?
No, I mean, Greg Taylor's a hard worker. He's a decent functional footballer, but he's not fit for purpose in the systems that Celtic and Ange Postecoglou in specific want to play.
Is that a Postecoglou polo shirt?
No, I think this is last season. Got it in sale in the Celtic shop.
Oh, did you? David Turnbull, no brainer. Absolutely. Yeah. Ismail Assoro, first choice, aye or no?
No,
I think it's a position we can improve upon. I think it's a position he'll want to improve upon.
I just feel there's always, he does a lot of good things and then he's still quite rash in things, and I just feel I'm just waiting for a big mistake from him, and I don't know why, but I just get the feeling that some games he looks great, some games he just doesn't, and I'm still on the fence with him. But for that position, I'd want somebody with a bit more physicality in there, and it's not his fault he doesn't have that.
We don't need to talk about Callum McGregor. That one's obvious. Odson Edouard, I think that's an easy one. He's not going to be here. Ryan Christie, we've already mentioned, and that leaves Leo Labada.
Yeah, he's been great so far. Really dangerous crosses. I can't complain.
So we're talking about three players here.
So what have we learned from that game?
We've learned from that game that come the start of the season, we're probably looking at the three guys that were charged with playing the most important games of the season will be left in the squad, and everyone else could easily be replaced.
Well, we've got Julian and Starfelt, so that's two centre-halves, isn't it? And if worst comes to worst, you can have Stephen Welsh in there until Julian gets back.
I'm just really disappointed in the way things have gone. We've got, you know, I know that everyone's like, oh, the new CEO, he's Don McKay, he's only been in the job for, what, a month now, or yad on the transition period, but it kind of goes beyond him. Do you know what I mean? It goes way beyond him.
Yeah, and because nothing happened before he came in.
And nothing happened. But and when he came in the first day, everyone, even casual Celtic observers, would know Celtic's transfer priorities. Yeah. And I just think that's an easy win for him. First day, this is what we need. Make sure, but make sure my manager has got his centre half for the game kicking off.
The problem is, but he could want this. He could want, I want centre half right back. But then when he goes to ask whoever's going to do it, Nicky Hammond left, the head scout left. So you're working with guys who we still need to employ.
So bad, man.
So we're still advertising for these jobs. We only advertised for these jobs a number of weeks ago instead of months ago when everybody knew it was happening.
On Gumtree joined Celtic.
The league actually starts next weekend.
Oh, I can't believe it. I can't believe this has crept up, because I think in some ways you sort of comfort yourself thinking, right, we've got a couple of competitive games, but you know these get earlier and earlier every season, and then all of a sudden the league season sneaks up on you. I can't believe but on the eve of it already.
See, saying that, watching the Michelin game, there's a clear style, there's a clear philosophy. We know how Ange's going to play it, and you like it. I liked it. I thought it was good. I think it will work. But then again, you see, we've not got the players, but then you've got Julian, you've got Starfelt, you've got Furuhashi coming in. Mm. If we go through against Michelin, we've got a tough game after that, haven't we? But we've got some of the building blocks there. We just maybe need two or three players, and then you could go, oh, maybe we could get through with them till January. But that's all fallen into place, and a lot of luck needed.
Whereas, all of what you're saying hinges on us getting past Michelin. Yeah, if we go to the first hurdle again.
If it goes the other way, it's we need eight players now.
Yeah.
Aye, without a doubt. I know it's... I think there are positives, there are huge positives to be taken, but it's all very well buying into a philosophy and a style of play at the moment, and then we've not quite got the team for it.
Because that hamstringing the manager,
is it? Because that could cause untold damage. Like, the longer that goes without having the correct players to play a certain way, then you know we could be out of a competition. I didn't expect to be in the Champions League this season, so I'm not hanging my hat on it by any means, but it just feeds back into the lack of readiness for the start of this season. I feel unready for it, because it seems to have crept up on me, never mind the club.
Two or three, if we had got a right back and a centre half in weeks ago, I think we'd have squished that game. You wouldn't have had Beaton playing.
And that's my point, it wouldn't have taken much. No. Just the centre half and the right back.
Yeah, because Greg Taylor done all right, and I think he will. He's probably the least priority out, the goalkeeper, right back, centre half for me. So if you play that, then you can go, right, fine, right back, centre half, you take out Beaton and at Ralston, and Celtic would have squished that game, I think, because Michelin weren't as good as I thought they were going to be. But you're going away from home now, and you need to win the game. There's no away goals, but we're going to need to score goals without conceding.
And Ange is still learning about his team as well. Ange could be looking at guys like Soro that Melly mentioned and Barkas and going, well, you know what, I was kind of in two minds when I first joined. First couple of weeks of training, I was in two minds about these guys, but now I'm like, you can't even make me rely on this goalkeeper. You can't, you know, I need a more experienced player to pivot my midfield.
Every day he seems more and more surprised at having to deal with what he's working with at the moment. Mm. It doesn't really give too much away, but at the same time, it doesn't hide much either.
Every time he opens his mouth, I'm mode bought in. Oh, 100%. Yeah. You bring up a good thing that's probably worth mentioning, that while we've been moaning here for the best part of 40 minutes, I'm so impressed with Ange Postecoglou.
Yeah, I think he gets most things right. I think it's just, again, a subject we keep putting off, but Griffiths we'll probably need to talk about tonight. I think he got something.
Huh?
I know.
Cheers,
I can't wait. But I think he was slightly wrong in what he said about that. I think he said that, you know, we may as well talk about it just now, but he said that the fans will buy into Lee Griffiths, will kind of get behind him if he starts scoring goals.
I didn't see that comment. No. I did see the comment where he says, I'm not going to tell the Celtic fans that they've been supporting Celtic longer than me.
100% totally buy into that. But what he said was, you know, all it will take is for him to start scoring goals. I think he's beyond that now, Griffiths, if I'm totally honest. I think we don't want to come on and talk about things like this, to be honest, on the podcast. It is tedious and it's tawdry, to be perfectly honest, talking about Lee Griffiths for about the fourth season in a row, being unprepared to start a season. But there's no getting away from it. What happened at the West Ham game is a major thing now, because we've now got Celtic fans at the game. This isn't just Twitter nonsense. This isn't just people falling out over Twitter because it's all just noise on there. This is people actually at the ground falling out with each other and shouting at each other and nearly coming to blows from some reports and all that. So it's something that needs addressed now. I think it's reached the absolute nadir. We can't go any lower now with the Lee Griffiths situation, and the club are going to have to do something about this now.
The Lee Griffiths thing, right, was always going to become a circus. We've been speaking about it. The guy's almost whole Celtic career is some sort of circus. And okay, you can gloss over that when you score a couple of goals, right? Yeah. But see, when you stop doing that, I mean, the contribution to your team, and in that respect, Ange's right. But what Lee Griffiths' latest thing is, he's just a creepy old guy in some girl's Instagrams. And I'm not getting into the rights and wrongs yet, and I'm not going to debate the point and all this sort of stuff. We know, I know what Lee Griffiths did, and I know how I feel about it, and Celtic fans know how they feel about it, the majority of it. If you find yourself defending Lee Griffiths and don't think he did anything wrong, then maybe you need to educate yourself a wee bit on that, because he did do something wrong. But the fallout from that is yet another circus.
Yep.
That should be avoided. And Andrew's saying, well, if he comes back and scores these goals. Every time there's a headline about Lee Griffiths now, it is followed by the phrase, as the striker is given an opportunity to resurrect his Celtic career.
I know. It's laugh or cry.
Unbelievable.
But what I'm going to say on this is that I can't be bothered getting drawn into the legal ins and outs of what he is alleged to have done, right? I can't be bothered with it, because, quite frankly, I find the whole thing exhausting. It's so tedious and tiresome. But I'm going to remain consistent in what I've said about the guy for two seasons now or whatever it is. He's not worth this. No. He's not worth this level of contention. He's not worth this level of discord between the fans. That can't happen because of a 31-year-old clapped out SPFL striker. And I'm not... Look, the guy was a cracking player for Celtic.
31-year-old clapped out striker.
But it's long gone now. Aye, but it's long gone with Griffiths now. And his contribution now is not worth this. He's not Neymar. He's not one of these guys where you need to put up with his appalling behaviour behind the scenes and all that. I can't get on board with that at all. And it's like, people are being told they're disgraceful for booing him and all that. But look, if I'm not going to get involved in that either. I wasn't at the West Ham game, so I didn't boo him.
It was horrible.
Yeah, I didn't boo him. I didn't applaud him. I can't understand applauding him for a single second.
Yeah, that's the thing I don't... I'm not going to criticise other Celtic fans. Generally, I don't criticise other Celtic fans for having an opinion, right? Everyone's got their own opinions. Christ, we've got enough opinions on the podcast. We barely, the three of us agree. Yeah. But the applauding Lee Griffiths, I don't understand that.
See, being at the game, the boos were clear from when his name was read out to when he was coming on the pitch, and then every touch got booed. Mm-hmm. But then the more he got booed, the more clapping came. So I'm not saying the people that were clapping him...
So you think it was more in a response to the boos?
That's the way I took it, because...
Okay. Well, that's a point I could probably get on board with.
Because I recorded it for Melly at the match. When he comes on, you can clearly hear it, and then the longer it goes on, it's getting louder. So, but I get that as well, because I was there. I didn't clap him or I didn't boo him. I was just waiting to see what happened, but I don't like booing players that play for Celtic, but at the same time, I'm not going to clap Lee Griffiths. Yeah. I don't want Lee Griffiths at my club, so I'm stuck in this position where I don't know what to do, whereas some people say you don't boo a Celtic player, and maybe they were clapping for that.
Money, you can boo a Celtic player if you like.
That's fine, but Celtic have put fans in this position where a lot of them don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. There's people that want to defend Celtic players. That's fine. There's people that don't want to boo players, so they'll clap. There's people that want to boo a guy because he's not there. That's fine. These are all valid opinions, but at the end of the day, you've put this guy in this position where the fans have to make decisions.
There's been no apology. There's been no message for the club.
No explanation, really.
They're going to review the social media. They're going to send Lee Griffiths, you know, there's been nothing. I know it sounds so tedious and boring, we're going to send him for edgy, but there's been nothing. It was just like, shut up, he's a Celtic player now. And some Celtic fans are rightly unhappy with what happened, but overall, you know, not minimising that incident in itself, but adding that to the laundry list, charge sheet.
My point exactly.
Add that to the list. Yeah. For last season, to his season, all just, you're just like, what are we doing with this guy? And you hit the nail on the head, Steve. He's no returning it on the pitch.
No, it goes back to what I was saying. It's like it's almost taken over the main story for me. And I'm not talking about the more serious story. I'm talking about the main story as with Lee Griffiths as a footballer, is that Last season he didn't come out. He was quite literally unfit for a whole season.
His manager.
That's what should have been at the end of it, yeah. And we wouldn't be in this position. But see, before we move on, a final thing on the booing from me, I'm not going to pontificate, and much like Ange Postecoglou, I'm not going to tell Celtic fans what to do at all, but you're not a disgrace if you boo a guy. No. But if you think there is a genuine...
I'd boo you.
There's people booing this right now to their laptops. But it's... can't wait for all the comments we're going to get, just constant boos. But if you think there is a genuine, egregious moral case to be answered here, why wouldn't you boo? Because he's wearing the right shirt.
Why would I take it for not putting the shirt on?
Why would that supersede your support for your football team? I think that's crazy. I think those two things are totally separate. If you think this is a genuinely case that has to be answered, and you want to express that, then you know do what you need to do. I'm certainly not going to pontificate, but I don't like this. We can't afford this. We can't afford this level of.
Why would we burden Ange with this circus? I don't care what Ange says publicly. He must have heard reports about Lee Griffiths last year, must see what Lee Griffiths is in training, must deal with this, and just think, why are you giving me this headache to deal with?
Yeah.
Why am I dealing with this headache? So that's the Lee Griffiths thing. We've spoken about it. We didn't want to, but we've spoken about it. Let's talk about something else. Let's talk about a player who's left the club with a positive legacy. Christopher Ayers went to Brentford, £13.5 million. A big chunk of change, a big chunk. Rumours that it was rising to 18 million, whatever the case may be. Apparently, Star IK, I think was the name of the club, yeah, we got him from, they had a 10% sell on clause. That would represent just that sell on clause to that club is their highest ever transfer fee received. Yeah. The previous one before that was the 500 odd grand we gave them for Christopher Ayer the first time. So they've done really well.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Eh? They've done really well out of that. Celtic's done really well out of it. Christopher Ayer's done really well out of it. That's the model, isn't it?
Well, that's the model, but you replace the guy in plenty of time, and this is it every single time. We've got this model, except there's massive parts missing where you bring in a replacement. Now you can.
Well, I think that's difficult. I think there's. I don't know if there's a club in the world, we've spoken about this before, that manages to have like the next guy immediately ready to go. No, to time that run would be too difficult.
That's fine. And if you say the guy should have been here 6 months ago, well, that's 6 months of a guy not playing well, Christopher Ayer does. So I don't agree with that part, but there should have been a replacement the 1st of July or when, as soon as we can get players in, because. We're going into these games without Christopher Ayer. Look, I think Christopher Ayer has been a great player for Celtic. I think it won't be until he's gone and we maybe see what he does down in Brentford that you maybe realise we don't know what we've got till it's gone. Because apart from Virgil van Dijk, he's the best centre-half we've had in the last 10 to 15 years, in my opinion.
He's peaked at just...
Changed your mind, didn't he?
Well, he did, but he did change my mind. But the point I'm bringing up on that is... It's been constant improvement from Chris Ayer. It's been constant, and he's reached the height of his powers.
If I may, Stephen, I think his exact words I remember were, "I will die on this hill." And he's not. He's resuscitated himself. He's come back to life.
I can't even remember, for old listeners, for new listeners, or people that have been listening at some point in the last 5 years, I think about 4 or 5 years ago, I was not convinced about Christopher Ayer. Maybe 3 years. No, it wasn't.
We're tying up that particular storyline now. Then
we can leave that one. And as soon as Nir Bitton leaves and all these other ones, we don't need to refer back to old Pater anymore. But he's reached the height of his powers. And, you know, people are saying, and I've read some opinions, that, you know, he's a good player, but he's not Van Dijk. He's not going to reach the heights of
it.
He's only 23.
Yeah.
He's gone down to Brentford, a great club, by the way, a club that we should be looking at for the transfer business.
At
23 years old, I think this is a great move for Christopher Ayer, and I think he will be absolutely. There's no reason why Christopher Ayer can't be the next Van Dijk.
Well, I don't know if his ceiling is as high. Time will tell. I think he is younger than Van Dijk was when he made the move, though, isn't he? I think he's even younger than Van Dijk was when he came to Celtic, or thereabouts. But I don't know if his ceiling's quite as high. But I know that when Van Dijk went to England, he wasn't taking the best care of himself. Remember, there were some reports about how he was a wee bit lazy, a wee bit overweight. That was even when he signed for Celtic as well. So Ayer is ahead of him in that regard. Whether he's as talented, I have my doubts, but it remains to be seen. But it's a huge success for Celtic. Now, taking aside what you've just said about the replacement, right, of course, so we'll add that wee caveat into the end. But this is exactly how it's supposed to work. Not only was he bought for, you know, a pittance, he was signed for very, very little money as a teenager. He came in, contributed enormously to the ceiling of history a number of times for Celtic, and he was moved on for great money. That's
when was your man?
Yeah, that's the perfect storyline. Again, apart from the replacement, which is Starfelt was in now, so we'll see how he gets on. But that's a huge success. That's how it works, and I can't understand people having a go at him for it. You know, he's not as good as he thinks he is, and all that.
Best of luck.
Who cares?
He's one guy. Like, again, last season, you couldn't have said, like, he made mistakes last season. Never did, but you couldn't say he's not trying. Because he was up against it in a poor defence, but he played his part in that, obviously. But he was never a guy to shirk away from it, and he was the guy that stepped up to take the final penalty as well and seal the quadruple trebles.
Of course. See the Brentford thing? It is a smart move. It's a very smart move for him, because a lot of people would just see the name and just think they're just some sort of middling English club, and to all intents and purposes, on the outside of things, they are. But it represents a quite smart move, because how often have we talked about in the past about how Celtic should pick their loans a bit better for the players that are going out, find a team that's going to develop them properly and bring them back to Celtic prepared for the next level. That's what players look at now, in my opinion. Now, some people will just want to play for big clubs because they're big clubs, but others will see Brentford as an opportunity to further develop their skills and move on to the next level. And that's what Brentford have got a track record of doing. It's not really a case today, I don't think, of people just going, oh, Newcastle have got loads of fans, I want to go and sign for them, because Newcastle are going absolutely nowhere. They're a very, very mediocre team with loads of fans and a crap manager. So I don't think it's the same where fans or players rather will go for that traditional quote big club, because I don't think it means as much to players anymore when they can go and sign for a team that suits their playing style and hopefully move on to the next level. So I get the whole thing all around. I think it's a very smart move for all parties.
Brentford have been scouting him since he was at Start, so they've kept tabs on him the whole time. And one thing at the start of this season, or the summer there, they had targets to go for and they wanted a right centre-half. So Ayer's going to get to play on the right-hand side, something he never got to do at Celtic. So that opens up the whole pitch to him, where he's left and he's not left-footed. So all the problems that... all Chris Fryer's sort of weaknesses, I feel, are maybe concentration and diving in. These are things you simply cannot do in England. So he's got everything else to be the defender. It's just those things he needs to round off. And I think playing in a league where you have to concentrate, where you have to be at the top of your game, will help him elevate his game. And I agree with you, Stephen. I don't think he'll be as good as Van Dijk, but I think he will be a very good defender.
It'll be interesting to see. Now, I'll be keeping an eye out, see how he gets on.
So he's gone. We'll bring Starfield in. He won't be here in time, obviously, for the Mittelland game. He won't be there to get registered. We know what we're going into Mittelland with. So I suppose a good place to end this podcast is, how scared are you? Do you see he's going through?
Oh,
I read, I think it was Celtic, Tony McLaughlin, had tweeted just before we sat down to record this podcast. What's his... Twitter handle?
Celtic Trends,
I think he put Celtic's probability at 31.6 to beat Mittelland. Don't know how that works out. But I believe he's a smarter man than me, Celtic Trends, so I'm taking that fully on board.
Numbers bod.
I think Celtic can get a win, but that defence frightens it. Shit at me, to be honest.
I think that's the sentence that basically sums it up for a lot of people. I don't think Mittelland were particularly impressive at Celtic Park. Whether it was just I know the away goals thing is gone now, but whether it was just a case of they wanted to turn up, contain Celtic a wee bit, get them home and beat them over there, I don't know. It kind of looked like that to me. They didn't do a huge amount of attacking apart from Sisto, who was quick and tricky. That was about it. Whether it's a completely different case over there obviously remains to be seen. I think Celtic have got goals in them. I think I like now that Christie's back on form. I think with Christie, Turnbull, Edward, maybe Forrest, I don't know how involved he's likely to be. Abada looks like he could score every time he gets the ball, basically. They've got goals in them. But is that defence? And the thing is with the defence, it kind of feels like we're having a go at them, and that's absolutely not the case. These guys have been absolutely thrown to the wolves by, you know, not only the people above them, the club, but by the more experienced players that are around them that are supposed to help them out through this game and near beat on. So they're really up against it. It's probably, as we said last week, it's probably the least prepared defence we've ever put out in a Champions League qualifier. So I worry about it, but I won't be blaming them for it. I can see it being anything to about 3-2.
I'm a bit tired of this now, this every year stuff, Melly. We don't have to cover old ground, and there's one thing I want to mention before we do wrap up. But Melly, your thoughts on Mittelland?
I'm trying to know where you can sort of picture games in your head and see how it's going to go, and like, I can see Celtic scoring, I can see them attacking and playing well. But it could all be for nothing, just one mistake, one lapse in concentration. And I wouldn't put it up against the back four because, look, they're young guys. But for that back four to get through 90, possibly 120 minutes without making one or two errors is going to be a big ask. And then you've got that goalkeeper behind them putting doubt in that as well. So, yes, I think Celtic can do it. Whether they will, I have serious doubts because we've seen it time and time again. Away days in Europe, when you've got defences like that, you let in goals and Celtic can't really afford to do that.
Yeah. One thing I forgot to mention, I feel that we should mention, is Chris De Vrij gave special thanks to John Kennedy.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, which I thought was a very interesting thing. Defensive coach John Kennedy getting thanked.
Peter Law made him do that, obviously.
The unseen hand.
I as a midfielder, it doesn't make any sense.
One hell of a midfielder. Yeah. Brentford have got on their hands there, boy. No, I did think that was quite interesting. Sort of. Do you think he did that because he's aware of all the stuff about John Kennedy and he wanted to make special mention of it?
Would you ever say that if anybody else done that? It doesn't make any sense for Chris De Vrij to go.
No, I don't mean it by Chris De Vrij. What I mean is he's a player that's leaving. I'm not denying that John Kennedy did help him. But I thought, do you think he maybe went public with it because he's aware of all this shite, frankly, that John Kennedy's been dealing with recently? And he might have thought to himself, that guy's dealing with a lot of crap. I'm going to make sure I thank him.
Do you think he's
aware
of that?
There's John Kennedy. Must make sure I thank him.
I just think he was being genuine, to be honest. I've said before, I think the stick Kennedy gets is a bit over the top. I can understand why people maybe don't want him there, but it just seems to be that it's over the top. And like, even in a group chat, I was saying, I must be winding us up. Like, why would he?
No, he's not winding you.
Why would he come out and talk about John Kennedy? Like, John Kennedy obviously has been there the whole time I was there, so maybe he's helped him develop his game. Maybe he specifically mentioned the quadruple treble wouldn't have been done without John Kennedy, so maybe there's something in there. So I just think it was just a guy genuinely being.
There's every possibility that John Kennedy's just quite good at his job, and no one's willing to give him credit for it, apart from people who are actually around him and who would know. We've been down the road with John Kennedy a number of times. I think we all get kind of sick of him last season when he was in charge because nothing really seemed to change, and the where we were still in the season, he was covered in the stink of that season. Yeah. Right? There's no getting away from that. He played his part. But now that we're on from it, now that we can maybe kind of move on from that season, hopefully, and Ange Postecoglou is in and is perfectly happy to work with him, I think we just need to let it go. See, this idea that he's been forced to take on John Kennedy, I don't get it. See, and another thing on the Ange Postecoglou's, I know we're wrapping up, but his backroom staff, how likely do you think it is that a manager and assistant manager aside, do you get coaches and fitness coaches and nutritionists and all that kind of stuff? Do you get them to move from Japan? Because they're not. Yeah. Bear in mind, they're just jobs at the end of the day. They're not like.
I would have liked to have seen him bring somebody with him.
But do they come? Do you move to Japan to get a coaching job in Scotland? Bear in mind that none of that, it's a massive club stuff comes in it because they're just an employee. At the end, they're not.
No, I'm not saying that. But I mean, he's got contacts out with Japan, presumably.
Australia.
I'm sure he's well known in the football world. He worked with Citigroup. He'll know.
Yeah.
He'll know people in the game, and I would have felt a bit better. Just one person. I've just never heard of a manager turning up at a club and working in. Now, I mean, we know Celtic are hiring, so he will undoubtedly have a say in all these people that Celtic are hiring. But I just think, you know, if things are not going well, right? So think, you know, there's all these workplace disagreements. They happen in every work. If things are not good, if he's like, wish the board would hurry up and get me to get. Oh, I'm not too happy. I know that. You know, if he's got beefs going up the way or beefs within the way the club are, he surely needs somebody he can confide in. You know, and guys that have been there a long time, office politics and all that. I don't see Ange Postecoglou, for example, sitting at the end of the transfer window. At the end of the night, the window closes, it's him and John Kennedy in his office and him going, I'm still really not happy with what I've managed to achieve here. Or I'm not happy that I've been backed or whatever, you know. And sometimes they might need a guy like that.
You're just guessing again, but aren't you?
Well, yes, Melly, because I won't be in the room. I'm only speculating.
Yeah, but that's the speculation.
Melly, see if you're going to sit here, right, and say, aye, but you're only guessing, you'll kill the whole podcast.
That's the name of the podcast.
You'll fuck us, mate. So don't let them hear you say that, because that's
what
we
mean,
do.
But if you're just saying, oh, mate, John Kennedy, why did he say this? Why did he say this? Where it's, why can't we just take it as it is?
Oh, you're talking about Chris Iyer?
Why can't we take Andrew's word for it that he wants to work with John Kennedy? In previous interviews, he's come out and said, I go into teams and work with what they've got because I like people there. He always goes all over the place. So is he going to take somebody from Australia to Japan, from Japan to over to Scotland?
Mate, I just said that. I just wish. That was my opinion. I would have felt a bit more comfortable feeling that Andrew's his own guy there, somebody that's got his back.
I could have saved us about 6 minutes there by just saying, John Kennedy, it's fine. It's fine.
And on that bombshell, that is a good place to wrap up as Melly gives the listeners an unforgivable peek behind the curtain there. Melly, would you like to say goodbye?
Goodbye.
Stephen, would you like to say goodbye?
Goodbye. We got through it, folks. It's been very, very warm in here. And on camera, I'm very, very shy. Do you know what I look like? I look like Mr. Burns when everyone thought he was an alien in the woods. You're just kind of glowing out there, but we'll get there.
What the listeners don't know is you've actually just pulled your jeans down to your ankles and you're sitting there in your boxers just sweating away. There's a lovely image. Okay, thank you so much to everyone who supports us on Patreon. Obviously, patreon.com/20minutetims. Go and check that out. As this goes on, we will have our pitch refined. But until that moment, thank you for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.